Oh, in terms of like housekeeping or just notes?
No, like a third topic.
Take the initiative, Jeff. What do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I think it's probably, even fine. Like, what else is there? You know, that's, I think it's relevant. I'm
just,
like,
I didn't actually care, Jeff. I was just trying to make a pun. I don't care what you want to talk about.
I think that's fine. just digesting more of what you're saying.
If your cards always seem meaner at somebody else's deck, you dream about jamming Blood Moon, you haven't seen nothing yet. We've got Anointed Peacekeeper and White Bloom Adventurer. Our dudes attack with Pro Creature, and they're on a dungeon crawl. Under City, Under City. Playing lock pieces and crawling to the throne of the three. Spirit takes a your trips away, and Archon, make sure you hardly play. A sword in my chalice, jailer in the palace, Under City.
Hello and welcome to the Acadian Threshold, the Legacy Podcast that's asking, isn't it that people usually do a deep dive on BOFA, not that BOFA does a deep dive on you? My name is Quinn Amore, and I'm here as always with my co-host Jeff Kinsey. Jeff?
I don't get that one. What's BOFA?
Did you just like walk into the joke? You should Google, if you don't know what BOFA is, you should Google it or ask on Twitter, actually.
Yeah, just go find a friend and ask.
You can, I mean, rarely would I say that you should at Elliot, but you should at Elliot and ask him what BOFA is. And I'm here with BOFA, my co-host, McBain, co-host number two. How's it going?
Oh my god,
that's so stupid. I'm just gonna go right now. There's no salvaging anything that's happened there. I have some housekeeping. Obviously, Eternal Weekend is coming up December 8th to 11th. As of right now, this second, this moment, tickets are not for sale. So
it's, look, there's 23 days. What can happen? Can you imagine if they like cancel or something?
Oh shit, we didn't print the tickets.
We're just all going to Pittsburgh and be like, what the fuck?
Fetterman. So that's happening, and probably as soon as they get notice that this episode's out, they're hitting the button and those tickets are for sale.
Yeah, all of this talk, by the time you hear this podcast, it'll be moot.
Local news, the first Mondays of the month, Connections has started doing legacy events again. Connections, home of the Harry Wong Memorial Classic. That's cool. I hope to make it out. It's nice when they do it rarely, because I can't always guarantee to make it out twice a week for legacy. But, you know, if it's once a month, it's a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah, I think the order that they're doing it is the first Monday is legacy. The second Monday is Pauper. The third Monday is Pioneer. And then the fourth is Canadian Highlander. Which is kind of cool. I know Canadian Highlander is like big on Vancouver Island, which is a small country-sized island off the coast of British Columbia. And it's also big in the Pacific Northwest, like Seattle area.
Mm-hmm.
But not so big in Vancouver, actually, or at least that we know of.
No, I think the only Canadian Highlander player in Vancouver moved to the Sunshine Coast.
Well, I could have sworn like out in the valley somewhere there's people who play, but
that is true. The guys that come out from Chilliwack or Abbotsford or whatever to the tournaments, I think they were big in the Canadian Highlander.
Yeah. I was watching Greg when we were down at Laughing Dragon two weekends ago. I was watching Greg and Travis play Canadian Highlander, and I commented to Greg that he was playing two games at the same time. The first game was playing the actual game of Magic, and then the next game was like trying to figure out which land to fetch because he was playing like a four color deck and he was trying to like optimize which colors and how meshing with his hand. And it was just like, this is the most, like, it made four color loam like look like kindergarten or something. I was like, this is the most complicated thing I've ever seen.
Singleton lands to find.
Yeah. And they were all like these obscure kind of like dual type making lands that it's like, oh, well, like, you know, it's like the tainted peak or whatever. It's like, if you have a swamp, this comes into play untapped and then you can do this. And then, yeah. Anyway,
I guess you have like three triomes, right? If you play four colors.
Yeah. No, he had some triomes. Yeah. Like it was just like the collage of like different types of lands and like mana fixing was, again, it was its own game. But
is strip mine legal?
Yes, because I saw Chad, the one game Canadian Highlander I ever watched, because he was excited about it. I walked over and he got turbo strip mines out of existence.
Oh man, can you play Fast Bond?
Yes, this is what happened.
I was like, you know, I didn't have anything disparaging to say about the format, but I was like, yeah, it doesn't really interest me, but I'm in.
Strip mine is 3 points and
sweet three
fast points. Bond, I don't see any points for.
How much are fast bonds right now? It's a reserve list, right?
I have a bunch of fast bonds if you need one.
It's fast bond. It's only $20.
That's worth buying for a format you'll play one time.
You know, you just have a fast bond around. Who knows?
Fast bond is sick.
Side tangent. How many points do you think Sol Ring is worth in Canadian Highlander?
How many points do you get?
10.
You get 10 points? How much is... What's the top? What's the most points?
7.
What is it?
Oh. The really good restricted cards. No, like Time Walk, Time Vault.
Oh, Powers?
Ancestral Recall, Black Lotus.
Oh, Powers Legal, but maybe not 5. Yeah, 5.
4.
4 is the correct answer.
Boom!
What about Library of Alexandria?
I feel like it's going to be high just because not everybody owns it. They don't want people to feel bad. But I feel
I
like
think
three,
it's,
two, like library that. Sucks.
One
is the correct answer. Okay, for the tiebreaker here. I'm going to go for a somewhat interesting one here.
There's no tricks. Like, no, these are zero, right?
No, these all have points. Okay. We'll get to that story though, Jeff. Yawgmoth's Will.
That's a powerful magic card.
That's a powerful magic card.
It is.
But in Canadian Highlander, how powerful is it?
Get 10 points.
Ball Ring's a 4. Lotus is a 7.
I guess you want to ask like how many points something else is worth just to kind of gauge.
How many points
you can each get one ask. How many points is which?
LED.
0?
0 points. It is not on the list.
I think Yogg was a 2.
Yeah, I will revise my number to 3.
Quinn, you are the winner.
Yes!
Okay. That's a side thing. Jeff, I think you had one other item.
I did.
Housekeeping.
Yep. This is the least local of all the events since we're including Philadelphia in local now. But just an announcement that there's a European Legacy Masters event happening December 3rd in Bologna. Check out Sahar was just on Elo Punters episode 36 talking about this. And if you're in, you know, around the area or anything, or just want to check out or read about some good legacy or hear about some good legacy, then check that out.
And Eel Hunter, it's like sorry, a consolation again, thing because they don't get in an Eternal Weekend.
Yeah.
Eel Hunter says Bob Wong,
Daniel Goschel for the Canadian representation.
Mm-hmm.
And
come on, you can do it.
I don't know, so I'm asking. If I
he's fairly popular. He's fairly popular. He's loud. He's exciting.
I think he's a famous D&T player.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, it's Anurag. Okay. So there's like the two D&D guys who don't like each other that much, and then one of them watches Owl House and there's on a rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, these are the three guys.
Yeah, you got it. Okay. Yeah. They're pretty washed.
That's archetypes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Jeff, we actually went down to a, was this like our second Seattle tournament this year?
A lot of similarities, too. This is the second time you went to play Magic in Seattle. The exact same Legacy Partners crew, me, you, Elliot, Dylan, we all stayed
guests at
the exact same hotel. It was great. Yeah, previous guests. The car did well.
Yeah, the car had two people in the top eight. Which not, we can get to in a second.
I'm going to issue a correction from last episode. I did not win, but only because, you know, that it was prophesized and, you know, you misinterpret it and then they end up,
right,
you know, ninth or something instead of first. Easy mistake.
Classic Nostradamus mistakes. So one thing that we did last time when we went down is we actually like went down the night before and stayed over, you know, got up nice and casual, went for breakfast and then went to the event and then drove home, which is kind of cool. But this time I think it was better in that we went down the morning of, did the event, but then we had like a hotel to stay at for the night. So we got to like hang out and just relax and, you know, bask in the glory that was Jeff's loss in the event. But
if that's a thing you can bask in, we haven't been basking enough.
Yeah, I'm gonna say we missed a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, it definitely feels like this sweet way to kind of do these kind of events down in Seattle, like both providing the opportunity to like hang out with people, but also just like, at least coming from my perspective as the person who's often driving, it's nice to just not have to like, one, not be able to have a beer or whatever and just kind of relax and put your feet up. It was good. But anyway, like, so Jeff, you ended up playing the initiative deck. I know you're kind of like, there's several builds out there. Like
such a wasted opportunity.
What should I have?
You both went down. Let's start with Jeff, who took the initiative. Come on.
Okay, why don't you lead, Quinn? So
leaving value on the table.
You didn't take the initiative and didn't come down with us. So why don't you like kind of ask some questions and guide us through
this experience. I took the initiative to have a relaxing weekend. but Jeff, tell us about your build of this white stompy deck.
Yeah. So I mean, this deck.
Hold on, Jeff. Where's the list? I don't see it in the top.
Oh my god!
It's not in the. Wow. Where can I find it again?
I definitely was just like, tech use dad doesn't understand. You have to scroll down.
Oh, you booned me on that one.
You gotta dig. You got to dig to the point where, you know, you ask me about it, I send it to you because it was not on the top eight.
Sorry, Quinn. Go ahead.
No, that was good. I was just surprised at the savagery, but it was good.
Yeah, so, oh my God, I just realized the list that's in the sheet here is not the list that I played.
I was just going to say, I'm looking at some Squadron Hawks and I'm pretty sure you didn't play those.
Yeah, so I was, as is the case, but with seriously, almost anything that I play right now, was amalgamating some information from, you know, XJ Cloud and some of my own thoughts and other people playing the deck, and ended up on a list. Notably right now, the difference seems split between a Mox Diamond list and a Chrome Mox list. And then within that, you know, do you have sagas or not? What are your choice of white shitters that aren't the good ones? And the rest of it's more or less the same. So the deck that I played was Chrome Moxes, you know, bunch of soul lands, bunch of white sources, four copies of each of the initiative guys. The Archon of Emyria, which is the first best non-initiative card in the deck, and then some Thalia Spirits and the boy, the big beefy man, Anointed Peacekeeper. This was the, like, debut for this guy for me, because I bought some when like DMU came out. I think that's what he's from. And it's a blender going crazy. it's a 2 and a white for a 3/3 vigilant human cleric. And when it comes into play, it's like Sorcerer's Spyglass. Like, you get to look at their hand and then you choose a card, any card, and activated abilities. That card costs 2 mana to use, 2 more mana, and the card costs 2 more mana to cast. Notably, it's any card, so you can name fetch lands. Very good. I was playing a couple of games against Dylan, and you peek at her hand, you're going, you got all polluted deltas. This is a turn one Anointed Peacekeeper. Like, see you later.
That's pretty savage.
When I went down to this event, I was trying to make a little sideboard guide, right, for what I take out and what I switch. And some of it's pretty straightforward. Like, I was playing Chalice, so it's like when you're, you know, want swords, often it's not a Chalice matchup. So you just one for one, whatever. But I was trying to think of what else to cut. I made a list and I was always like, well, Peacekeeper seems like, you know, the weakest one of the batch. But about halfway through the tournament, I really just saw the unbridled power of this strong, vigilant man just poking in. I had a lot of fun with that card, man.
Okay, I just have to say, I really don't like the art. Like, I just don't.
Just double gunning it. Just boom, boom. He's ready to go.
That's a real, like, American piece, you know?
Yeah. Like, this guy's been featured on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Like, he's ready to slam. But just getting the information of seeing people's hands is great. And, like, you know, you might have something on board you're ready to name, but then you can see their hand, and now you also know what to play against. It has vigilance, which comes up a lot. It's also a cleric, so when you have the seasoned dungeoneer or veteran dungeoneer, whichever one isn't the common one, out, it can attack, explore, maybe be a 4/4, and is still vigilant there hanging out. I was playing against, like, Depths, and, you know, just got the name, like, Elvish Reclaimer, and, like, they had it in play. It was like, okay, it costs you like 4 mana to use now. And then, you know, I got another one. I was like, I don't even need your Thespian Stage. You have sitting over there. Okay, that costs you 4 mana to activate your Thespian Stage. Like,
I need to interrupt for a second, because you were like, cleric's relevant, seasoned engineer. I'm going to read the clause for anyone who, like me, was like, what does it do? That's fucked up.
There's a lot of text on this card.
And it's good.
And it seems like trinket text.
No, it really seems like trinket text.
No, because you see how good White Plume is, and White Plume comes into play, you get the initiative, and then it has some weird fucking text about untapping stuff on upkeep. And, like, that comes up, but you're like, who cares?
Target attacking cleric, rogue, warrior, or wizard gains protection from creatures. Like, that's good.
It is good.
And then it explores.
Which is also good.
Yeah, that's wild.
Just, and explore also isn't like drawing, like, it puts the card in your hand if it's a land.
Oh, so it gets around, like, Narset?
Yeah.
Oh, and it gets around your spirit. Own spirit, yeah.
So it's pretty good. Yeah, then you just attack. Oh, per creatures, you can't block him. And, oh, he's a 4/4 now. It's great. So that card was good. It really surprised me. And just the deck is fucking crazy. And seeing the lists come out now that people have got a bit of time to tinker with it, and as of, you know, date of recording, it was just released on Modo today. I know JR already got a 5-0 on his first try playing the deck, and some of the innovations that are going around in there. So, I mean, I think it'll be posted by the time this is out, but talking about playing, like, Once Upon a Times, because you just increase your chances of a turn one initiative. I mean, you even find your Ancient Tomb, or you find, like, the initiative piece.
This is like the Pauper problem all over again, where it's just like the best thing to do is, like, race initiative.
Yeah, it's just how fast can you slam the initiative, and really nothing else matters.
There is a certain, it's not really irony, but, like, how aptly named the mechanic is.
Right.
It's just like, well, no, you want to take the initiative, and it's like, as in, like, take the initiative, and they're like, exactly. Now you're catching on to it.
Yeah. So upside is I didn't buy Chrome Moxes yet. So if this Mox Diamond build turns out to be better.
Oh, you could just buy Mox Diamonds?
Exactly. I'm not buying fucking Mox Diamonds either, but you know, I could at least have like half of one instead of four Chrome Moxes.
So that was like the most poorly thought out thing that I've heard of. Like,
well, that's actually a compliment, I think, given our track record.
Good thing I didn't buy these basic islands, because if it turns out the Volcanic ends up being better in the deck, I'll just buy, you know,
easy peasy.
Just a quick question, Jeff, on the Anointed Peacekeeper. Were there any like value names where you're just like, you are already dead, abandon hope? Like, did you get to do any of that when you were playing?
I didn't get to do any play of the games or anything. Stone Brain. Can you name a card that's been spoiled but not legal yet?
No, because it has to be legal in the format, right?
Yeah, but it was good all day. Now you can name attractions, I guess. You can name Mind Goblin.
Oh wait, actually, maybe you don't have to name a card that's legal in the format, because is that Ockhand's Run card? That's a
Ockhand's Run. What?
That's unhinged.
Yeah, that's
right?
A card.
Yeah, but that comes up in like the when you play like Pithing Needle, it comes up in the menu.
Oh, Ockhand's Run is a Lurgoyf. Does that come up? It was always Sarpedian Empires for a while, which is harder to name in person because you have to like whisper it.
Why?
Because it's in italics. It was always on top of the list because it was in italics.
Fuck.
The deck was extremely good. I think the deck was good enough to propel itself through a pretty bad build. For the vast majority of the tournament, the only games that I had lost were first round because I didn't like practice that day at all. I had the most brutal like chalice check that I was so embarrassed by. I had a guy that I flipped off of the initiative, so it hexproof until your next turn. And I had a chalice and I had some other stuff going on, and my Jeskai opponent's like dead when I attack them on the next turn. So like mentally, I'm like, I have this locked up. They can't do anything. I'm covered. And I attacked. And then he goes like, swords your guy. And I paused for a second. And I was like, there was a reason I was protected from this. I thought about this and I am safe. Why was that? And I'm looking at my board and I'm looking at my guy that has counters on it. And it's like, because it had hexproof until my turn, which is now, and it doesn't have hexproof. Yes, swords resolves. This is gone. And like, as I like, you know, write down my life and I'm moving my card, I like go over my chalice on one. And I'm like, no. You can see the opponent with the swords out, you know, hand shaking. Like, You know, speaking of the movie we were talking about there, Total Recall, when we're in Seattle. There's that scene in Total Recall when he's trying to convince him it's like a dream and like, this is all fake, don't worry. And he's standing there and Arnold's looking back and forth and he's about to buy it. And then the guy has the sweat breaking down his face. That's what my opponent was doing and I didn't see.
The dream was too strong.
Yeah, but I lost that first round after... There's a game I lost fair and square and there's a game that I threw away for missing that. I beat him game one, but then every single other game until, I don't know, match five or something, when I lost against the guy who won the tournament, I didn't lose a single game. And it was just like turn one initiative guy, even like non-gross hands, like turn, you know, two something else or initiative guy, like just shitting on people left and right with this stupid, uninteractable emblem. The deck is extremely good, and I'm looking forward to playing it some more. Oh, and I cast a lot of cataclysms and it fucking ruled. It was so good. Lost
the first round, that you won every other round?
I lost round five or something too.
Oh, okay. I was gonna be like, how'd you not make top eight then?
Yep.
Okay.
I think I finished 10th or 11th, you know, somewhere in the smattering of 4-2s.
Did anyone do better than that? Do we know?
I don't think so. I think thanks Elliot for coming out, guys.
So I guess we'll just move on to That's Gas.
No,
I lost to the same guy, Jeff.
Yeah, I know. I know. Okay, hang on. Last minor story in that I was playing as that guy. I'd seen what he was on, which was mono black, like helm. And I saw him around the room earlier, so I knew what he was on. And I kept his hand. And my only white source was the Emiria's, like the land spell. And turn one, he just goes Thoughtseize and takes that because it's a spell. And then my turn, I just like have like colorless lands and white cards in my hand. It was justice for the hand that I kept, but oh, I felt bad. All right. McBain, you were down at this event with me. You were playing lands, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so I was on lands. Dylan or Elliot was on his, like, what do you call it? Like, blue Zenith bullshit. Yeah.
Zenith bullshit.
This is, like, the same general list that he went to the finals with at Puget Sound Battleground. I think this is, like, the quintessential Elliot bullshit deck, mm-hmm. if I have to say. And Elliot made it to top eight. I made it to top eight. Dylan's Fate, who was playing the like Force of Phil Miracles-esque with
Triumph of St. Catherine.
Yes, he was playing. He wanted to play Triumph of St. Catherine. He was going to play Doomsday, but instead he played not Doomsday with sideboard, or Triumph, or the St. Catherine and the sideboard, because that's not a thing. But he played the Miracles version. And had a great time. He said he had a lot of fun. He did have one spicy thwart in his deck so that he could bounce multiple Mystic Sanctuaries at one time.
It's so gross. Thwart picking up three Mystic Sanctuaries.
I think I kept asking him because like that was like the most appealing thing to me about his deck. And I think he said that there was the most he picked up was two at one point. But still, I can't imagine like fighting through a control deck and then they're just like, whoa, put those back in my hand. Like, it's like worse than when your opponent's like, Fate Seal you with Jace. And you're like, oh no, they're turning the corner. But yeah, so I played lands. Things went fairly well for me. I did ultimately make it to the finals and lose to the same guy that you were on. Honestly, I had no idea what he was playing. I knew it was like mono black and like Leyline Helm, but I had no idea what like the surrounding cards were around that. And even by the end of like match three, when I eventually lost, I was just like, I'm still not really fully sure what's in this deck. And really that, I think it just speaks to like the lack of experience I have with some of those like corner case things that you would run into on like random Magic Online leagues that you'd be like, oh, this is what this is. And I've looked up the list and I've kind of like played through it.
By round one of a GP.
Yeah, I had not done that. So I was just like, okay, well, I'm going to board in like Force of Vigors, but I'm not really sure what else I'm doing here. So I kind of noodled through that. Ultimately didn't draw very well, but the day overall was pretty fun. I definitely like luck was very much on my side all weekend, except for something that happened after the event, which maybe we can go into later. But I guess luck was still on my side then. But I ended up like not really losing any matches all the way until the finals, and then ultimately lost. But it did. I don't know. It was fun. I definitely like, so some of my real lucky moments, you know, it's going to be a good day when like you're playing lands and your first round opponent is a lovely fellow named Sage from Portland who has this beautiful Ad Nauseam Tendrils deck that you don't quite know it's an Ad Nauseam Tendrils deck. And then they kind of like play the Preordain and you're like, uh-oh, something's up. Like maybe they're going to, and then they just start comboing. And I'm like trying to apply pressure with Urza Saga tokens and stuff like that, kind of realizing the gig's up and he's just going to combo me. And they peer into the abyss, draw 22 cards.
Well, they missed.
And then miss. And I was like sitting there, like kind of tapping the table. I'm like, oh, come on, miss. And he's like, well, let's see. And like picks up the cards and looks through it. And they basically had to hit a non-land mana source. They'd use their land drop for the turn and they missed. And I had like lethal on board for the next turn. He's like, okay, going to game two. That's when you know it's going to be a good day.
Yeah, I was sitting next to Sage.
I mean, they need to hit exactly pedal in, right?
Yeah, there was pedal, and I don't know if LED was a hit for him either, but definitely pedal was.
You'd have to have two and a pass in flames, right?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure he was on the non-red version, so he had. It was interesting. He had no ad nauseum and no pass in flames.
They were sitting next to me at some point talking to somebody because somebody was like, oh, are you on ant or test? And they were like, well, it's kind of my own thing. And I didn't get to see what it was. They weren't like, it was in the middle of their match. And they're like, I'm not going to tell you what it is right now, but like, we'll see.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe like the Infinity Turbo card? There was a few of those around the Paradise.
I believe they must have been. I didn't see it. But the sideboard games play out totally different now that the ad nauseum decks or the whatever black blue combo deck
storm
deck plays a whole bunch of Osages in the sideboard, and it's so rude because I'm sitting there, I'm trying to like deploy all my spheres and lock them out and cut them on mana, and then the end of turn they just like, oh, I'm gonna kill the sphere.
Like, I'm sorry, are you the lands guy and you're complaining about the card Paseju?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, can we get that? Just get that on record right here.
Yes. But
I'm just trying to beat him down with some constructs I get for free off my lands, and then I get Pithing Needle naming his fetch land, and he's got Paseju.
Yeah, basically something like that. Yeah. But I had this weird game two, punted, or they made a play that they didn't have to make. They could have made a safer play, but they had like end of turned Posaged my sphere. They went to untap and I ported one of their mana sources, and they responded with a brainstorm because like people feel it's rude to not do that when someone ports their land, and they stacked their cards back, and then on their main phase they went like LED ritual, cast ponder, hold priority, and they pitched everything so that they're going to draw the card with ponder and can keep going.
Woo.
And like whenever you get to those like key junctures with any kind of storm or combo deck or whatever, I always just like, I'm like, okay, pause, I just want to like take an accounting of where we're at right now. And it was kind of like what you were doing, Jeff, with the chalice thing, where you're like, okay, something's happening here, like what can I do at this moment? Is there anything I can do? And I'm like looking around, I was like, hold on a second. And I didn't realize it at first, but like I just like instinctively always want to pause on key moments like that. And just because I'm such a horrendous slow player, thank you, Quinn, for saying it. I asked him, like, okay, pause for a second. I just want to like, how many storm are we at? How much mana are you at? Like, cards in hand, what's going on right now? And I didn't realize this, but he was like all of a sudden shaking in his boots. And he's like, oh my God, no, no, no. And he had just realized that I had a Thran Foundry on the board.
I was going to say, did you have Thran Foundry?
I had a Thran Foundry on the board. And I was like, okay, so here's where we're at. And you're going to draw this. And you know what that is because of brainstorm. Okay. And I just look over and it was like that little kid excitement face. I was like, I'm going to activate Thran Foundry. And he's like, no. And shuffle his graveyard into his deck. So like all of a sudden now he's got a random card on top. It's got all this floating mana, and it's just
why'd you bring Thran Foundry in?
Literally for this, or for like past in flames lines and stuff. It's kind of like
you just didn't have it.
I don't know.
It's like they cast Paradise, and in response, you like put their
So it's some kind of interaction, and you're like half the cards in your lands deck are just literally garbage.
Okay, so this is like the D&T thing where you're like, I'm bringing in Pithing Needle because like 90% of my deck is dog shit and maybe I can name a land.
100%, yeah. That's what it is. But So they had like afterwards, they were kind of analyzing their lines and they're like, you know, I didn't have to do that. I could have done this and blah, 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 and probably would have gotten there just fine. But yeah, Thran Foundry to the rescue. So yeah, started off against Ant after getting pretty lucky. Then I was able to beat Naya Depths, 8-cast Bant, that Bant Ephemerate deck that Travis was playing.
Yep. I mean, also just like the blue Zenith, but with like Ephemerate, Eternal Witness, Aurum's Chant, Spellseeker.
Yeah.
All kinds of shit.
And I got super lucky against him. Again, like, I feel like I don't deserve the wins that I got at all, because it was just like, he had kept a somewhat greedy hand, played out some mana. I just attacked the mana right away. And he had an island out. I poured him on the upkeep and he's like, response brainstorm. This is like turn three or something. He looks, puts the cards back, and then just says, pass the turn. And I was like, that's when it's not even like a little bit of blood in the water. You know, it's just like there's a whole whale carcass in the water and you're just ready to feast as the lands play. And you're like, what's that? Do you put two cards back with brainstorm? Didn't make a land drop and you only have one land that I'm going to keep porting? Go on. and then game two, I actually boarded in against the Bant Ephemerate deck. He's got a whole bunch of mana dorks and I boarded in my two lightning bolts from the sideboard.
Oh.
And they were super good all day. But in this instance, Travis went first. It was like, Noble Hierarch, go. And I just went like, land, bolt your Noble Hierarch. So turn two, he's like, okay, land, Noble Hierarch again, or some kind of mana dork. And on my turn, it's just like, punishing fire your guy off like a Mox Diamond or something, and then wastelanded one of his lands. And he's just like, fuck. Like, and it just... just cut him on mana, played a spear, played an Urza Saga, and that was the game.
I never expect a fucking bolt out of lands, and it always feels so bad.
The bolt has been... so I was very much just playing and emulating what Hallie's been doing with the lands deck, like pretty stock, straightforward lands that you take to a showcase challenge kind of thing. And Allie had been playing two lightning bolts on the sideboard specifically for Magus of the Moon because it was getting so prevalent, but it has all this like random just interaction, like against Delver, for example, but like even against the Naya Depths deck or the Bant Ephemerate deck, I would just like bring those in, and the one mana interaction to trade off on some card, especially when they're like, when you're trading up on resources, is just so powerful. Double drew into the top eight. And then because I double drew and Elliot was on like the bubble to playing for top eight, soon as like, and he won, like there was all these like weird tiebreakers at like seventh, eighth, ninth place. And as soon as he won, I immediately realized, I was like, I'm going to be first seed and he's going to be last seed and we're going to have to play. And then they post the things and it was like, no. Car kill. You're
licking your lips.
Yeah. Well, I'm like terrified of playing Elliot's deck. It's just the literal worst. And we had some like pretty crazy back and forth games, but ultimately I was able to channel the power that is Sphere of Resistance and killed all his mana and just kind of cut him on everything. And then I was able to get there.
Worth noting too, was that just one Sphere of Resistance that that broke his spirit?
No, Jeff, I think you're correct in that it was two Sphere of Resistance. The second ball was the one the that two got ball. Him. The old two ball, yeah. And all day, like even against Elliot, but against basically every other opponent, I was playing one Crucible Worlds in the main deck and also one Ghost Quarter. And I had multiple games where I just Ghost Quartered, like Ghost Quarter Loam, Ghost Quarter, like Crucible Ghost Quarter. Like against the Storm opponent, I triple Ghost Quartered them. Against the 8-cast deck, I Ghost Quarter locked them in one game. Against the Ephemerate deck, I Ghost Quarter locked. Like there were several games where I was just like, Ghost Quarter Lock You, that like you just like, if you're not playing that, it's just an avenue or a line that you just do not have.
And Mama Mia.
Basic lands are just like, basic lands are great and they let you get out from under sphere, but all of a sudden when you can just cut their lands like that, it's just savage. And it feels extremely good when your opponent's like, I will not search my library. And you're like, okay, just checking. Are you sure?
It's also like a blood in the water moment, right? Like one ghost quarter, it's fine. Two ghost quarter, it's fine. That third one, and they start sweating.
Yeah. So, well, you can tell, like, there's a certain, like, when you, like, you haven't even played it yet. You're like just starting to cast the loam, and you can just see like that Ralph moment where their like spirit just breaks and they're like, oh no. But yeah, so then I got into, maybe we just like go through quickly the top eight.
I thought you're like, maybe we'll just go through the rest of my matches. And I was like, okay. It's a,
no,
the, no, it's an interesting angle.
One thing I want to mention about the whole thing, there was there 60 players or 50 some odd?
I think it was like 58 or 50 something.
I think there was like maybe two Delver players in the room. The whole event really felt more like an embracing of like playing Legacy, because like Legacy's cool, instead of like people who were just jamming Delver because it's the best deck. Like, you look around that room, you're like, what the fuck is going on? There was somebody playing the creative technique, like, you know, Cascade deck, which is like fucking insane. You know, Lee was there. Mr. Lee was there, also playing the initiative deck. There was, I think, four Goblins players that were all in contention for top eight, all on like Sticker Goblin. Some of them playing Attractions. There was somebody else playing like Attractions. There, it was just pure insanity, and it was everything I want out of like a Legacy event.
I couldn't agree more. One of the, so the eighth place deck was actually the Thought Shift, or what do you call it? The Paradigm.
Yeah, like Paradigm Shift, like Thassa's Oracle.
Thought Lash, Paradigm Shift, Mono Blue, Mill Yourself, Win with Thassa's Oracle, or Jace Wielder Mysteries deck. Which is awesome. I think it's just like a super unique, cool deck. Like whenever you, like, so there was multiple people there who had that, those Markadian Mask charge lands that come into play with two counters. So there was, I guess, like the creative technique person had them, and they were foil. So I remember looking over at one point and there was like three different, there was like Hickory Woodlat, the Saprazin Scary, and one other one. I don't know. I think it was like the,
There's a red one they play.
What's the red one?
It's Needle, Sandstone Needle?
Sandstone Needle.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were like just like beautiful Markadian Mask foil. They
anytime just, like, you see a Stabbers and Scary, like, you know, you got to sit up straight. Like, some shit's about the fucking
would you say that off. It's surprising and scary?
Be here all night, ladies and gentlemen. So that was the eighth place deck. There was a, I think you just mentioned this, Jeff, but seventh place was a, the deck name is so good. It's Mind Goblin D's Rides, because they were playing one Attractions card.
Rad Rascal, which is correct. Three in a red for a 3/3
Devil employee.
Which is important, because that means that we get +3/+3 from Embiggen.
Oh, okay. That's good. Finally make Cameron on employee.
You could just play Giant Growth, but, you know, stop that. When Rad Rascal enters the battlefield, open an attraction.
So I was actually sitting beside, what was their name? Glenn. I was actually sitting beside them at one point. So because I got to, just as a side note, because I got to double draw into top eight, each of my opponents, I was like, hey, do you want to play Forgetful Fish? And at least Matt, who was on the Thought Lash deck, was, I was like, do you know what this is? And he's like, no, but I've heard about it on your podcast. And I was like, thank you for the compliment, but I'm going to explain to you how Forgetful Fish works, because this is quite an interesting and intricate game.
He didn't say he liked the podcast, just that he heard about it on the podcast. So it wasn't a compliment necessarily.
Let me interrupt for a second too, because Jack was there and he was using the mat that we gave him, and he said that he sat down with his first round opponent and looked at the mat and said, "Oh, I've heard that podcast. It's not for me."
Did Jack win?
I don't know. I should have asked. It was already too funny.
That's definitely compliment accepted. But so I looked over and Glenn has the sticker pile that he's like, they're randomizing so their opponent can pick the stickers for the game. And then he's like, oh, hold on, I have my attractions, and like gets the attractions out and they're doing the whole attraction thing. And that it was, you could tell that the attraction part of it was like a total just troll, but in like the best kind of way. But I think at one point you said like he did have the attraction out and was doing things with it. But anyways, just for the act of having the cards, doing the thing, going through that process, we're going to tip our hat. But there was, what did you say, like three or four actual
Goblin sticker decks? I think there was four, which is insane. And they were all doing really well.
Yeah. At one point, they were all at like the first row top table. I think that was like round four or something like that. But yeah, some of the lines are just crazy, like when they actually like get going. But other top eight. So we had Elliot on this five color Zenith list. We had, I can't remember this guy's name, on Painter, the mono red Painter deck. I think it was David. Yeah, David. So this is like very stock, just Callum-esque red Painter, the one Brea's Apprentice. Did you play against Painter at all, Jeff, in the event?
Nope, did not. I did get to play against a few decks where I had to judge them based on basic land, one spell.
as it was intended. There was a red prison deck that top-aided. There was what's the fancy, high-minded, highfalutin, blue-red Delver?
A Delusion.
Delusion Delver. There was a Delusion Delver deck that I played off after Elliot in the semifinals and didn't know that they didn't have Wasteland in their deck, but learned that they did not have Wasteland in their deck.
Oh, wow.
When Mazabeth just went to town on them and they could not do stuff.
Why would you not put Wasteland in your deck?
It's the new dichotomy.
What's the dichotomy?
That looks like the infomercial-esque, like
does that make you sell someone? Does that selling. Make you better than them? I don't understand.
I think the shift is you're saying I am not a tempo deck. I am a blue-red control deck.
I want to like say I'm not good enough at Magic to like have an informed opinion on this, but like if you're going to be a control deck, don't you want white for swords?
I don't know.
So
and a sweeper.
It's honestly, it's an interesting deck. So like just kind of going over some of the cards, they've got like Shredders, Darcy's, and Murktides as their threats. Ponder and Expressive, Brainstorm Days, all that normal stuff. They've got two Lightning Bolt and two Unholy Heat. And then they got two Pyroblast. They're still on 4 days. I've seen ones with 3 days because, you know, that's really highfalutin. And then there's four Mishra's Bauble and two Counterbalance in the main. And then for their lands, because Wasteland is not a land, it's actually a spell in these decks often. Because they like literally don't have colorless costs other than the Shredder, they just play 16 lands. So super low to the ground. You're always kind of cantripping and doing stuff. I know he loves the deck. So
and not so this is not at this particular person, but just in general, like I know this has come up more than this person. And again, to like question my own expertise here, but you know what you're like. It's like, well, when will they ban something from Delver? And it's one of those moments like, well, all empires fall eventually. Like, they're just going to, like, oh, they'll just crumble on their own.
I think if a deck's good enough for long, people start subconsciously making it worse.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, yeah, it's like the it's the Roman Empire. Just, it's interesting. I can't think of any deck I play where I'm like, oh man. When you find out they don't have Wasteland, when you'd be like, ooh, that's bad for me.
It's following the elves trajectory.
Sorry, they're playing three extra Mishra's Baubles? Oh shit.
Yeah, there was game two. I got into a situation where like I mulled to five. The amount of times I mulled to five in the event was kind of insane, but I mulled to five and I just tried to stabilize with a Maze of Ith while I kind of tried to dig for an actual mana source. And then the Maze of Ith was just doing work. And I tried to like cast a Sylvan Library and cast like things to do, and they're just like counter days, and I just got a Thespian Stage into play. I finally drew an extra mana source. I was like, copy the Maze of Ith, and I just had two mazes, and they're just like they literally just couldn't get past it.
Dude, an unanswered maze is so fucked up. Like,
yeah,
it's just like a permanent removal spell on whatever is the biggest thing on the board at all times.
Yeah. But both, or at least in the second game, they were never really able to get like the Shredder or Darcy really going. It was always just like trade off one for one, play a Murktide, try to do stuff. But because like they just couldn't interact with, like they had a counterbalance out and all this. And I just like was locked out in many ways, but like Maze of Ith just went to town. I feel if they had like two Wasteland in the deck, I probably wouldn't have walked away with the win in the second game at least. But both times, like I was sitting there trying to play around Brazen Borrower and Wasteland, like trying to set up redundancy so I didn't just die when they finally got that. Little did I know they had neither of those cards in their 75, which sounds crazy to me. But so I guess they weren't planning for lands, but they also said that like the last like six matchups they played against the lands, they won. So I'm not sure what's going on.
Till they met me.
So there was Shredder, then there was lands in second, which was some idiot. Then the deck that killed both of us, Jeff. This Jason Wong on mono black helm.
Can we pause for a second and just say, like, we spent a good 10 minutes on, like, basically what is Delver, and you just were like, ah, oh, there was, like, a Painter deck? We don't need to talk about that.
You talked about the Painter deck.
You used to believe in something.
I said it was, like, stock.
You used to be a connoisseur of fine art.
This is true. I still have,
anyway, sorry, like, continue.
I would probably play this Painter deck if I didn't want to have to go buy like a whole bunch of Furies.
I got you.
I know you do.
Yeah, I have my own Furies now. You can borrow his.
Yeah.
That is tempting.
Although seeing how you treat my Urza Sagas, I don't know.
It's really powerful. I'm going to drag you into this now. It's like, it's not as cool as old Painter, but like, I don't know, no decks are as cool as the old deck used to be. And it's just like, man, Fable's a really good Magic card.
Yeah, it is.
And also, like, it's a good Magic card, but when your opponent, when you're like, turn one Fable, and they're like, counter, you're like, yeah, burn a forcible, idiot. Like, sure. Like, and then you're holding like Painter in your hand, and you're like, okay.
Yeah. And you even got the Monkey Blast still going on.
Oh god, so many Monkey Blasts last week. It was sweet.
Yeah.
No, it does sound like the worst cocktail ever invented.
What would it be called? Like Fable of the Monkey Blast or something?
It's just like fucking banana liqueur.
No, it's like a
blast.
It's like some kind of drop shot, and like the drink is like a sickeningly red color, and you drop in and it turns blue. And it's still disgusting.
Okay, let's talk about who killed you, McBain. Who is the winner? The winner who killed this event.
Both of us, Jeff.
Yeah.
So I had no cert. I think there's probably like someone else who like didn't want to split the top eight or the top four or whatever. But both times I was just like straight up, I'm not doing it. So let's just play. And when we got to the finals, they kind of adjusted the prize pool at the beginning of the event because so many people showed up. So there was like an elevated prize pool. And it eventually got to the point where I was like, okay, like I'm interested or fine with splitting here. Jason wanted to split and he's just like, I'm fine splitting the prize. I think it's the better play, but I want to play for the title like 100%. And I said, I agree. Let's do it. And I knew he had Leyline Helm in the deck and it was a black deck, but I could not, like, you know, sometimes mentally you can like build the deck in your head and be like, okay, so if you have this, you probably have that. And like, because you'd have that, you'd probably have this. I was like totally blind. I have no idea what this deck is. This is definitely one of those decks that would show up in the Slack after like the legacy deck dump with like a bunch of fire emojis beside it. Be like, look at this pile. But Quinn, what are your thoughts on this deck? Maybe you can kind of go through some of the.
I feel like we've seen this. Rotting Regisaur is like, I feel like usually a sideboard card, but it's got like Dothy Voidwalker, opposition agent. And then like kind of like the stepsister, stepbrother, Turok Dreadcantor, a good powerful card, but like not at the same power level.
Turok's
like,
so good.
Not at the same power level as Dothy Voidwalker, though.
It's true.
It's a black deck, so it's four Thoughtseize. You play Dark Ritual, and Chrome Mox because you're trying to like power all this stuff out on turn one. And then it has the Ferris Planeswalker, Karn the Great Creator.
The boy.
I feel like this is a deck that like does really well in the absence of Delver.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. But it's also just like it can also just luck out like any bad matchup.
Yeah.
Even like some stupid initiative deck.
It can take the initiative in the sideboard.
Oh, the sideboard tech? Yeah, he's talking
Passageway about Seer. Much worse than the cards you're playing on its face.
I don't know about that. I didn't win the event, but I don't know about that plan of just playing your own initiative guy.
I think you play this in like against decks that have no creatures, right?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's definitely like, not like it's a not choice.
Counter tech to white stompy or anything.
Yeah.
But Passageway Seer is 3 and a black for a 2/2 lifelinker. When it enters the battlefield, you take the initiative at the beginning of your end step. If you have the initiative, put a +1/+1 counter on Passageway Seer. Which
so it's basically a 3/3.
Like, yeah, decks with no creatures are kind of going to be like, okay.
Yep.
I'm sure I boarded poorly for this. Generally, there was like a line or two that was questioned by Elliot afterwards. And I definitely did not draw very well. Game one, I just drew amazingly well. Or like my keep. He like mulled to 5, I think. My keep, I was just like double Mox Diamond, Light from the Loam, make a Dark Depths turn 2 or 3 or something. Like it was pretty brutal. But I had a Sylvan Library and I went down like and I just drew infinite cards. But game 2 and 3 were a grind and I just could not draw reasonably well for the life of me.
I think it was like my the third game.
I guess I have that main deck ley line too, right? It really shuts off your ability to like grind back.
Well, and the Voidwalker as well, right?
Oh yeah.
Also and then even just like opposition agent, like stopping stuff. I think there was an interesting spot you had, and I think it was the third game where they had an opposition agent, and like you had a fetch land, you were gonna crack like just into it because you needed to shuffle away cards, and that was cool because for a while you were asking like, what does opposition agent do, and you're looking, and I was like, no, don't fuck it up, and then I realized that you know you were just like, I need to shuffle, I don't care if they get a land, that's fine.
Yeah, so there was a point where I picked up my fetch land and I went to put it in the graveyard. And then as soon as I started doing it, I stopped. I was like, hold on, I don't want to do this. Like I saw the opposition agent play and I was like, oh, hold on. And then I looked at the judge and I was like, so nothing's changed. I haven't like really announced anything. Like I don't want to do. And he's like, yeah, you're fine. You don't have to do that. And then like I continued to take my next turn. I was like, the fuck, I should have fetched. Like I need, like, even if they get a land, I just need to clear the top of my library so my Sylvan gets me three new cards. And that's like the really important part of why I wanted to fetch in the first place. And I should have just like
been like, have a Bayou or whatever.
Yeah, like, here, go ahead. And like, even when they went to fetch, they went to get like a wasteland out. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it doesn't let you just get any land.
Like, I would like to replay this match if that's what this does.
Yeah. But the, yeah, so then the following turn, I like cleared the library or whatever, but it was just like every little resource mattered in that game, and I couldn't get out of it. But there was like times when I had like Force of Vigor stuck in my hand, like just needing to hit a green card or another land source so I could.
That was savage. There was like four draws. It's like you need a green source or a green card, and then you can cast this force, and you just got nothing.
It's like whiff, 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 and then it was just Urza's Saga, Karn, boom, 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 and it got out of control, and I lost. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the event. It definitely made me acknowledge that playing just the odd Magic Online is extremely valuable for kind of sharpening your saw for deck identification on like the outside the kind of standard deviation, like the first or second order standard deviation of decks that you might see. When you kind of encounter that odd stuff and you go, hold on, I know what this is. Like, it's probably this.
And I played one league so far practicing, and I've been playing that. Like, I just every match, I was like, this is wild. Like, I don't know if this is helpful, but you've convinced me now. At least there's something.
Yeah. Like, there you go. Just be like, well, at least when I run into this and like,
I'll recognize
round five of Eternal Weekend, I'll recognize what it is. And maybe have a plan. Cause I was definitely like, even game three, like one of the last turns of the game when he just played Karn, I was like, of course you have Karn. Like, I guess I don't know. Like, you got Regisaur in there.
Dark Ritual and
Why was you on? Like, I didn't like. I remember some of these decks. They would.
Play, oh,
like,
also you're playing Helm, depths. Right?
Yeah, and yeah, you weren't sure Helm. If it was like, Lake of the Dead, like Reanimator or something.
Yeah, I, like all oh, of yeah, those yeah. things were in my head. It's like as options. I was just like, I don't know. Like, do I need to keep in Graveyard Hate? Like, what am I like? And I got so focused on. I think this is a trap that like you can easily fall into. Is like you're focused on stopping your opponent. And then you kind of dilute your deck to the point where it's not doing what it wants to do. And I probably did a bit too much of that on top of some ugly draws. But anyway, enough rambling. That was the, I got some American dollary dues.
Sadly, didn't get your name on the check, which is the saddest part.
Did not
part.
Get the name on the check.
Wait. Did you get credit or like cash?
So I was going to ask for cash, but not only do you get credit or you can get credit, but they also ship or they said like, we can just ship the stuff for free to Stronghold. Like they have some kind of business relationship.
You're saying you have Four Furies.
I guess. I don't know if they have Four Furies, but.
I mean, you don't have to buy Fury. Well, like, yeah. Okay. If they're in stock, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, theoretically, I could, you know, get a whole bunch of cards. It was a good chunk of money, but I don't have Four Furies right now.
Notably, but, too, I remember talking to the guys at Laughing Dragon that are running the thing, and they were like, you know, our last event was won by Minotaurs, and this one is won by, like, Mono Black Helm. Like, I don't know what kind of picture we're putting out. No, disrespect at all, but they were like, you know, somebody's just gonna look at the winners of the last two events and wonder what the hell's going on in Seattle.
Yeah, well, I don't know, I think that's fine. I guess what you're saying is it's like, dude, I won a Legacy Challenge on Magic Online. It was a Saturday event, and you're like, oh, okay, so like a little softer, you know, not that competitive. And that's what they'll say about the Seattle area. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, a ham sandwich win.
I love the implication from you that if I were to win a challenge, you'd be like, yeah, but it's a Saturday one. Like, come on. Come on.
What should we talk about on the podcast? Well, Jeff won the challenge. And McBain's like, I cross it. It's a Saturday.
I don't get out of bed for a Saturday.
We could mention it.
I had fun, though. Lands was great. Deck was awesome. I really enjoyed some of, like, the corner case stuff. Like, Lands is one of those decks is like you add one card in and you have like so many tutoring and options and stuff like that. All these doors open up to you. It's kind of like Painter in a way. You could do that as well.
Not anymore,
I guess. Yeah, now it's well, yeah, there's got like Twin Shot Sniper and there's some random stuff, but yeah, I guess it's a little bit more straightforward. But maybe a better analogy is like Jeff on Esper Vial or something. You're like, by adding this card, I can fork, double fork the universe into
the one perfect.
But
yeah,
it was fun. As much as I still have a love-hate relationship with Urza's Saga. Like, it's a fun card.
It's not fun.
But it's not fun.
It's like winning is fun. The card itself is not fun.
As fun as, but, yeah, it's as fun as winning is. Like, every other card they printed, it's like, as fun as winning is.
But it's really, really good with Sphere Resistance. Holy moly.
It's when people are like, oh, sometimes, you know, you have to like decide whether you want to like make the guy or just like tutor the one drop. And I'm like, yeah, that's a decision, I guess. Ooh, sometimes you like play it out too early. I'm like, well, that's just a mistake. That's not the card being hard to play. Like,
it was fun. So Jeff, for Eternal Weekend, you're like, there's not really any decisions.
Are you
like
you're adventuring?
I'm adventuring.
You're
adventuring. It's also worth noting, too, that my options to change are pretty limited because I am leaving on Monday to go to Ontario up until Eternal Weekend. So
well, you're leaving next Monday. Yeah,
wow. This Monday. So I'm not going to be bringing more cards with me aside from what I need for Eternal Weekend. So I need to have my list pretty well locked in. So I'm going to be pluming it up, I think.
Why is DNT not well positioned right now?
I think I know the answer.
Please.
Because unlike the last two Eternal Weekends, JR hasn't released a guide on how to play DNT for the world to follow.
It's got a decent Delver matchup, right?
It's okay. It's an okay Delver matchup. You know, I can't even give you a proper answer. I think it's just every once in a while, DNT hits these spots where everything gets new cards, right? And DNT gets a lot of new cards, and most of them aren't. They're not like the same level of impact as other things. And there hits a point where like the power of everything else kind of outcreeps what DNT has, and you're kind of operating in a different league. And then, you know, DNT will get something or something gets banned and then it kind of surges again and you're back up and you can
compete. But it got like Solitude and
yeah, that but that's like those like old now.
The thing, the big bashy thing.
Kaldra Complete.
Yeah. Like those are powerful magic cards. Just like not like what is it?
No, they are. They're very good.
What like what problems does it come up with, against?
Look, it's bad. I haven't been playing DNT. I can't tell you. You know what, though, for a segue into that SCAS, I got a perfect one. If you want to know why DNT is not good right now, and if you want to be good at DNT, our friends XJ Cloud and Jason Murray Leonil are starting up a DNT coaching class complete with office hours. Dates undefined is when it's starting, but chuck some money in, sit in a classroom, ask these questions to people who know how to play the deck way better than me. It's cool. It's gas.
Listen, DG's bad, but if you want to learn how to play it, you can spend some money.
I think it's honestly, I don't think it's like that bad or anything right now.
Oh, okay.
It's that's just, a, yeah, it's something like that goes through iterations where you have main people who play the deck and they play the deck a lot and they either get burned out because it's not as good as it could be, or, you know, they just don't feel like it. And right now I think is a big don't feel like it world. You still have like David Lance out there playing like red, white DNT, Acolyth out there playing, I think he's also playing red, white. There's a lot of good people that are still playing the deck, but you know, the
news. I mean, like, buddy, I play Infex. Like, I'm testing Infex. So, like, when you're like, oh, there's not enough good cards. I'm like, fucking white privilege again. once again, just flaunting it in my face.
I think there's also, I don't know what you'd call it, like the influencer effect of like the people who are the loudest kind of make something feel more popular or less popular, mm-hmm. because that's what you hear. And like, other than if when someone who's very popular with the deck kind of goes on to something else, it feels like it, you know, kind of dies on the vine and withers, when really there's still lots of people playing it. It's still a great deck. I was just looking at the metagame data and it's still like a 50% match win rate at a minimum, which is better than a lot of quote unquote popular decks. Like, it's still fine. But the idea of like, oh, but like these two or three people who I normally hear about playing it aren't on it, so therefore it's dead, or therefore it's not as good. Like,
D&T is dead, long live D&T.
Yeah, I don't think any of like, and it goes with any deck, I don't think anyone really means that as in like, I don't want, like the Toy Story meme, like, I don't want to play with you anymore. But the sometimes it feels that way. And yeah, just something to keep in mind.
McBain, since you're talking, you want to keep going?
Sure. I was also just looking at the metagame here and I was acknowledging in my mind, I was like, oh, Sneak and Show, 51% match win rate. Interesting. Better than a lot of decks. For me, that's gas. I'm going to have to kind of thank Allie for all the great material that he puts out. He's done a lot of stuff, but most recently he did like a kind of lands barometer where he just did a YouTube channel, like kind of like slide deck review of like, here's the different lists. Here's what I've been doing. Here's how I like see the metagame and how I'm like preparing for it. And here's a couple lists that I'm considering. And then he also has a lot of material on like how he approaches different matchups, what he boards, what's important. And I think I've talked about this before, but he will break down a matchup into like two or three bullet points on how he wins a game and two or three bullet points on how he loses a game. So you can kind of paint a picture in your mind of like, oh, like I'm going to lose the game when they get like a Murktide and then they wasteland you or something. So that you can kind of, one, internalize that for a game that you haven't played before, or a matchup you haven't played in a long time, and then start to recognize the signs of what your opponent's trying to do as you're in the game. You go, oh, right, like this is important. This is what I need to do. And for someone who had not played a lot of really competitive lands in a while, it was really helpful to kind of like re-up that muscle memory and learn from someone who's put a lot of time into it. So huge that's gas to Allie. You can actually go listen to him on the recent episode of the Dark Depths podcast, where they both go over a lot of what he's doing there, but also kind of like how he's gone through this very like deliberate practice approach to just being an adult with a family and playing competitive Legacy at a high level, and how he goes about that rather than just like, I'm just going to play a whole bunch. It's a very deliberate approach of like, I'm only going to play a little bit, but that time is going to be used extremely well, and how he uses that time well. So if any of that sounds at all interesting, I definitely recommend go checking out the Dark Depths episode with him on it. But Quinn, I know that doesn't interest you at all. So why don't I pass it over to you to maybe round things out?
Even if it did, I have the Chrome Mox Mox Emin problem that Jeff has. Where I could have not
classic
bought
problem.
I could have bought not the Chrome Mox, but not bought the Chrome Moxes, but I can only have half a Mox Diamond still. So I want to that's gas. We've done this before, but different reason, specific reason. I want to that's gas friend of the show, Brendan Lensick. So when I mentioned MTGO, you know, long time listeners, the astute listeners, the real threshers might be like, Quinn doesn't have decks on Magic Online. But Brendan, let me use his rental account to prepare for Eternal Weekend. So he was just like, oh, you know, I don't plan to play Magic Online. I don't know if he meant that or if he's just saying it, but regardless, I'm indebted to him for letting me practice. So now I have no excuse when I like 0-2 drop in Philadelphia. So shout out to Brendan forever, as always, being a great guy, but also for this specifically. Thank you, my friend. Anything else before we call it a day? So we will have this episode, one more that'll be real hard to get out before we go to Eternal Weekend. We should talk about that after. So maybe one more, and then we will try and, I think we're going to try and record at Eternal Weekend potentially.
Yep. That should be a bit of chaos.
Yeah. And then, you know, maybe we'll be talking about how one of us owns a Ponder that only like 12 other people own. We'll be trying to sell the Ponder, let's be honest, on the podcast. We can only hope. If you made it this far, thanks for listening. We'll see you on Two Thresholds.
What's